Welcome back. You're here with Dave and Faisal on 77CHQR and More Than Money. And we're talking about, we just finished a segment that, some people will probably heard, geez, defer to 75. That means I got to work to 75. I'm not working to 75.
Yeah. 75 is scary. I'm not going to get that money that I put into CPP until that period of time. Or I'm going to, that old age security that was told that I can get that when I retire, I'm going to have to wait 10 more years. That concept of deferral is an emotional one, too. It's not just mathematical. We'll do the math.
Right. Yep.
I'll work out the math with any of them and tell them if it's the right thing to do for them in their situation. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of people who say, yeah, I know the math, but a bird in the hand is better than two in the bush.
Yep.
Right? And so
that's what we often get. That's exactly the comment that people get, right? Yeah. And they underestimate how long they're going to live, right? And so they work out the break even. They think, geez, I got to live to 80. I'm not going to make 80, right?
Or whatever the number is.
Yeah, whatever the number
is,
75.
And so now to ask for a deferral to 75, but it's very interesting because we saw an article out of the United Kingdom. And it was talking about, more than a quarter of people, about 27%, think they will be full or part-time employment when they are 70. 27% of the population, let's assume that we're going to use that as Canadians as well.
Yep.
Let's come out of the UK. So almost half of these individuals will also believe that they have that their financial well-being will need to be to require to have their lifestyle they want would require them to work to 70.
Right. So there's a difference between wanting to work to stay engaged, keep your mind sharp and be active. And then there's a difference, people would view it differently if they were forced to. And then there'll be a group in between that says, I want more than what I can do. And so it kind of kills two birds with one stone, right? I can work and I can earn more income. So it's a really emotional topic, right? I think this is the issue. Do you need to work? Do you need to work to put bread on the table? Or do you need to work to give you an enhanced lifestyle? Like, there's a whole range of experiences people will have.
And by lifestyle, it's not only a financial thing, it's an engagement thing.
Right.
It's to do something in retirement. People know how to get to retirement. They don't know how to get through retirement. So that's the concern that people have. And so you're going to see more and more people. And we have that in our clientele.
People are redefining it, though, right? I mean, at our retirement conference, Faisal, we led the conference off talking about kind of the changes that have taken place, but the impact that the baby boom demographic, who is now moving into retirement, has had. And the traditional definition of retirement doesn't apply anymore, right? This demographic is again demanding different things as a result of how they envision their retirement.
Correct.
So I don't want to imply that working is a bad thing. Working to earn money to enhance your lifestyle is a bad thing, right? There's all kinds of reasons why you might want to do it. But for sure, people need to think about whether or not that's part of their model, right? What does retirement mean to you? It used to mean a generation ago, I stopped working.
Yeah.
I don't think it means that anymore, right? So when I read these, I read them with interest, right? There are a group of people, because things have changed and economic circumstances are such that they need to work longer than they would choose to work in order to do what they need to do.
Correct.
But there's a whole bunch of people now, too, that also say, I like what I do. Yeah. I might not want to do it 50 hours a week anymore, right? Or I don't necessarily want all the stress that I carried before, so I'm going to modify that.
Yeah, I call that financial independence, because there's a difference between retirement and financial independence.
Right.
Retirement means you're actually done work.
Right.
Financial independence means you have the choice to do what you want to do. If you want to work, go ahead. And if you say you want to pare down the number of hours and cut your pay in half or whatever it may be, you can do that. Or if you want to fully retire sometime in the future, which means you're not having any employment income and you're going to live off your savings, then you can do that too. That's the financial independence point that people are trying to achieve. And that mathematics behind it is one thing, but more importantly, it's all tied around lifestyle.
Yeah, so I'm going to disagree with you slightly on retirement, because I think it's being redefined. The definition of retirement, right?
No, you're right.
It did have a meaning a generation ago. I don't think it does today. I think it is, and again, I would say that this has been driven by the baby boom generation. They're very individualistic in terms of what they want from an experiential perspective. So I think we have to talk about a transition point now, not necessarily what we would, the word retirement, because it's been defined differently.
Correct.
Or it has to be redefined.
That's
fair. Well, because, I think it's very interesting.
I've learned with working with you for so many years, if I just agree with you, you won't stop. You'll stop talking. So you're right, Dave. You're right, Dave.
Beautiful. I love to be right. Okay. Let's. That was an interesting article, but I want to transition a little bit to the headlines again, kind of what dominated as we sort of pull this show together. I was interested in the noise again in the market. It's shocking how much noise we have. But on Friday, okay, let's back it up a little bit. The Trump administration has been very vocal about the fact that the trade, certainly between U.S. and China, is a problem, right? Mm-hmm. China exports too much into the U.S. relative to what they import in terms of U.S. goods. Here we go, right? We start this whole process. We got the fight with the whole world right now, but it started with China. Well, on Friday, China's trade surplus with the U.S. swelled to a record in June.
Correct.
That's not going to sit well.
No.
Right? Interesting. Now, I don't want to read too much into these numbers because I strongly suspect that Chinese exporters probably to beat the tariff deadline, you know, accelerated exports into the U.S. So we set a record. There's no question. The headline number tells just under $29 billion deficit. But this, the noise in the market, I'm just pulling
is
on
it
that.
Noise, Dave?
Well,
is it noise? You know, we say that a lot on the show. There's a lot of noise out there, and I hear
so
you.
So let's talk about
but
the impact.
Is it noise? There's going to be some impact here.
Sure. There'll be some
and
change.
It's not going to be every Calgarian. It's not going to be every Canadian. It's not going to be potentially Canada. It may not have a major effect to this.
Right.
May not. But this is not just noise. This is not
fair.
This is not just someone yelling at the top of their lungs and it's getting attention. This is an opportunity to actually fix things. I call it the equilibrium of trade,
mm-hmm.
right? There's an opportunity here where countries will start saying, maybe we got to fix this deficit and try to be equal with everybody.
Sure.
If we're trying to equalize our equilibrium point, right? There also is the other end is it could get very aggressive. We were talking about this. We were walking out of the office and we said, not one country besides China has come back and said, we are going to nail the U.S. for this.
For what they're not doing, what commitments they're not fulfilling.
And I don't have the data in front of me to tell you where the trade gap is in U.S.'s benefit, besides Canada.
Right.
Besides Canada.
Right.
And the Canadian government hasn't said, clear up your gap.
Right.
Right? No one has stepped up and said that. And can you imagine if they did? So I don't call this just noise.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
There are landmines out there, right. And we hope no one steps on them.
Right. There was some interesting research done this week by one of the big U.S. banks in terms of what happens if the U.S. follows through with a total of $250 billion. It could go as high as $500, but right now, $250 billion worth of Chinese goods that have tariffs applied to them.
Yep.
Their research indicated that the U.S. economy slows in the order of 0.3 to 0.4%.
That's going between 3.5%, currently 3.5% and 4% is what's been the target for most of the economists out there.
Yeah, I mean, the second quarter will be an aberration. It's going to be a giant GDP number in the U.S., but let's run between 3% and 3.5% on an annualized basis.
Okay.
Okay. So we get a 0.3 to 0.4%, somewhere between a 10 to 12%.
So 2.5% to 3% overall.
Yeah.
Just use that as a good range.
Okay. China, 0.3% drag. So about the equivalent of the United States.
But what's very interesting about this trade, that this whole trade issue that's coming out, is that in China, they have this program that's called Made in China 2025.
Right.
Okay. The whole concept is to bring up and actually high grade or value add their middle class.
Right.
To start building more luxury goods, building more technological goods, where most of the technology is being imported from outside of China, primarily from the U.S.
Right.
This mission Made in China 2025, don't forget Saudi Arabia is trying to rebuild their economy and change things and diversify by 2030.
Yep.
Like this is what's happening and
Norway.
Who's gonna impact from that? It's gonna be the American economy.
Yep.
If everybody can take care of themselves, and especially a country like China with the population they have, that's a big threat.
There's a change coming, and thank you for correcting me on that. It's not just noise. There are real changes happening. I was interested to read the impacts, the research that's being done in terms of the impacts. If you look at growth in the economy, with the U.S. running on an annualized 3 to 3.5 and China running on an annualized 6 to 6.5, you can see where some of the arguments arise that it's, you know, the tariffs are actually worse for the Americans than they are for the Chinese in this particular case on a percentage basis. So it's not clear cut for sure, right? There's going to be renegotiation. There's going to be, and it, you know, the Trump administration, I call them noisy. Some of the things they're targeting are not wrong. They've been abuses for a long time. So it's not black and white, right? There's shades of gray.
Flip it, though. If you flip it and you say, who does it benefit for this stuff?
Right.
It does benefit the Americans to have equilibrium. to some degree. It does benefit the Americans to see the EU break up, because the EU is the largest economic superpower combined. As a you break that up, they're no longer the largest economic superpower. So there's benefits to all these things that are happening. Who's benefiting from that? We know who's getting hurt. But if you see who's benefiting, you can kind of make that prediction from there.
Yeah. Okay. Let's wrap this up, my friend. We're coming to the end of another show. We've got a seminar coming up.
Yeah. On Tuesday, July 24th, 7 p.m. at the Crowfoot Co-op Wine and Spirits. You need to reserve your seat. So give us a call, 966-8400. That's 966-8400. Or go to our website at morethanmoneyradio.com.
Thanks for joining us to another show. We'll talk to you next week.
David Popowicz and Faisal Carmelli are portfolio managers and investment advisors with CIBC Woodgundy in Calgary. The views of David Popowicz and Faisal Carmelli do not necessarily reflect those of CIBC World Markets, Inc. Clients are advised to seek advice regarding their particular circumstances from their personal tax and legal advisors. If you are currently a CIBC Woodgundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Woodgundy is a division of CIBC World Markets, Inc., a subsidiary of CIBC and a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada.